Welcome to this week's episode of The Art of Authenticity. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today we have Ted Gonder joining us. Ted is a member of the U.S. President's Advisory Council, and he's also the co-founding CEO of MoneyThink, the only movement of young people restoring the economic health of the United States through preventative, transformative, and evidence-driven youth financial education. Not only that, but Ted has been featured in Forbes, Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sometimes, Wall Street Journal, the Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, NBC. I mean, the list is really endless. He's also met the president, and he hasn't even turned 30. I believe he's 26. Ted is not only successful, but he is somebody who is deeply authentic. And I know this because he's a dear friend of mine. I met Ted when he was 20 years old, and I got the opportunity to participate in a competition that he was throwing for his company. And within moments, I knew that I was talking to somebody very special. He has become part of our family. He actually hangs out with us, has dinner, plays with my 10-year-old son, and we just adore him. I know you're going to enjoy today's show. We talk about how coming out of the gate quickly, how he handled that, what that meant to him, and all the different ways that the literature, the philosophy, the ideas of authenticity have helped him in his career trajectory. So thank you so much for listening. Welcome to this week's episode. Today we have Ted Gonder joining us. Ted is a dear, dear, dear friend of mine, somebody I met, I think, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And the story was I was going to one of his company's competitions with a friend of mine. And I bumped into, at that time, I think a 20, 21-year-old young man, and I was just blown away. He's become part of our family. I'm so excited to have him on the show. Hey, Ted, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
Absolutely. We've been meaning to do this for a very long time. So both of us are a little chomping at the bit to get started. There's so many great topics here. So Ted is somebody that I have enjoyed talking to on business. He's an entrepreneur. He runs a company called MoneyThink, and it teaches financial literacy to underprivileged youth. And he's also somebody who shares a passion for philosophy. So, you know, lots to think about. But Ted, I know the story, and, you know, I know it's like such a guiding post in your experience going into your business. But when you were 16, if you could share with the listeners, you had a big turning point. If you could tell that story and what it meant to you.
Totally. So I guess the background to that is that I was kind of a knucklehead growing up. I was sort of a troublemaker. I wasn't a great student. I was always getting kicked out of class. I was really like the class clown. Just didn't do my homework, skateboarded around every afternoon, never listened to my parents. And when I was 14, actually, I failed a math test, and my mom posted signs at the local community college or something saying something I imagined to be like a desperate mother seeking tutor for failing son.
You said that before. That can't be.
This is like in my imagination what the sign said, like, or what her heart was screaming. And the first guy to call was this young man who was 19, had just flown to the US from Ghana and was studying at the local community college. And he became my tutor and started coaching me on math and academics, but also just on life, and taught me things like goal setting, and just really helped me to sort of see through the fog of being a freshman in high school and feeling pretty lost in the world. And then a couple of years later, in a less dire situation, but I was still quite a goofball. My grades were better, but I still really didn't know where things were going. I ended up at this leadership conference for high school sophomores because my mom had enrolled me. And I show up and, you know, it's all of these student government presidents, captains of sports teams. And I never at that point really self-identified as a leader. Mm-hmm. I admired people who were leaders, but I was very much the kid with his hood on and his arms crossed in the back of the auditorium. And I went to this conference and had never been surrounded by that many motivated people, who motivated and unjudgmental people. Like, everybody there was totally cool just being themselves and being enthusiastic about being leaders and about like thinking critically and speaking up and participating in smart conversations about all kinds of worldly subjects. It was just this huge exposure opportunity, totally changed my worldview. And so coming out of that conference, I really decided to change my situation and change parts of my friend group, change the way that I spent my time, the way that I thought about the world, and take control of my life moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard you, I love this story because it actually had a huge impact on my life, because I was kind of, you know, as a girl, I wouldn't say knucklehead, but you're right. I was like lost and not doing what I felt was anything with passion at a certain point. And I had a big turning point. You refer to this phase, though, as you caught the football and kept running. And right. I thought of it as, you know, I was behind and I've been spending most of my life trying to, quote, catch up, right? And when I heard you say that, it was this like aha moment of, you know, I always talk about this, that your narratives change the meaning of your life. And I stole your beautiful football image that, you know, it is how you frame these things. So you saw that as a turning point moment and you caught the football, you never stopped running.
Right.
And you started having success after success, right? Like got into University of Chicago.
Right.
Got a scholarship. Is that right? For swimming. Right. And built this company, MoneyThink.
Right.
What do you see as the, somebody coming out of the gate? I mean, you also met the president. Is that?
That's correct.
And I mean, I know these things, but somehow when I'm saying them back to you, it's just crazy. Somebody who's coming out of the gate and having these successes, a lot of them are happening before you've even finished college, you caught the football, you're running. What are the kinds of lessons or how did you take all that in? We hear about people having success early, the challenges. How did you manage that? How did you think about it?
Well, I've got to say that the biggest thing that came with, I guess, you know, on the surface, at least you'd call these, you know, accomplishments, early accomplishments, things like getting into a good college, getting a good scholarship, building a successful organization or company, getting these sort of cool bucket list things like meeting the president and other things, these accomplishments. First and foremost, I think there is just a tremendous sense of accomplishment followed by gratitude anytime you put a lot of hard work into something and it pays off. And there's a temporary high that comes with it, and there's a sustained confidence that comes with it. But there's also a shadow side, which is, you know, why are you so ambitious in the first place? On the one hand, I think for me, it was, you know, I caught the football. My parents grew up with very little. They did not grow up with the kind of privilege that I had. And I grew up in just a normal middle-class family, but they didn't. And so even in a more meta sense, ancestrally, I caught the football and kept running just the minute I was born. And not everyone has that. To a certain extent, in the US, your zip code determines your destiny. And so, you know, born into this, and then despite the fact that I was off track, by chance got the right tutor who was able to relate to me, and then ended up at this conference where I was at the right moment in my life to have this psychological shift in my worldview. And for whatever reason, I had the support systems in my life through my parents and other friends, and I was at a decent enough school that I was able to change. I was able to take those psychological shifts and turn them into behavioral changes for myself that led to better outcomes. But what I'll say is, like, all of that coming into play is against a lot of the odds that are stacked up for you. And so there's this huge sense of gratitude. On the flip side, though, it's like, well, why were you ambitious besides that, besides the momentum, besides the fact that, well, I caught the ball, I've got to keep running. I'm so lucky. Like, what else would I do with this privilege but start an organization that helps people? You know, to a certain extent, there's also like, am I good enough? Like, who am I trying to please by building these things, by seeking accomplishments, by trying to meet the president? Who am I trying to impress? How many Facebook likes is ever enough, right? Like,
never.
There's like a people-pleasing performative side to all of this that I didn't even notice about myself or acknowledge about myself until pretty late in the game.
So I'm just going to stop there for a second because you said things that I just have to call you out on. I'm so used to you, but you're 25. Is that right?
Yeah. 26.
26. You're already talking about accomplishment followed by gratitude, right? That there's shadow sides and my ambition looked this way and my, you know, there's a people pleasing side that I've dealt with that I didn't get to. But a lot of people can get into their 30s, 40s, 50s and still, you know, not even be thinking about these things. I know because I know you and I've been to your first apartment, which was this studio. He didn't even have a bed. He slept on the floor. But the one thing about the apartment was that there were books lining this huge window you had from one side to the other, and they're all self-help and they were all, you know, business leadership. And so can you talk a little bit to like the realities behind your ability to speak like that came from a real discipline on your part to dive into this much content to support, you know, everything you were up to?
Yeah, totally. Well, so the reason that those books were on the wall isn't because I'm naturally into reading. Like, I never thought of myself as a reader initially. What actually happened is when I went to that leadership conference at 16, and then 2 years later, when I actually went to an Anthony Robbins conference when I was 18, two of the things that I learned were, number one, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time around. So that influenced who I hung out with and the friend groups that I sought out and helped me sort of slowly get rid of toxic people in my life that were dragging me down. But the second thing related to the books is that you really need to seek out mentors. And you might ask, you know, how are mentors related to books? Well, most of the best mentors are actually dead. Like, it's true. Like, if you look at like philosophy, you look at biographies, I mean, imagine every time you sit down on public transit or sit down in your reading chair or like, you know, open up a book before bed and you can learn from like any biography, like Ben Franklin, Marcus Aurelius, Amelia Earhart, like all these people can be your mentors because they all like wrote shit that you can read.
Right.
Or somebody really smart basically tracked down all the details of their life on how they succeeded and became a decent human being that you can study. And like, you're not too good to study how to be better, right? Like, there's this sort of myth, at least like in parts of where I've come from, where people think, oh, self-help is cheesy. And like, oh, I don't need self-help because like I am the way I am.
Or heads down, right? Like, I think the biggest phrase I hear right now is heads down. Like, just put your headphones on in your big group work environment and just pound out, right?
Don't be a charlatan. Don't talk about how to be better. Just be better. Execute.
Right.
I'm like, well, okay.
Which is no different from when I grew up and it was just man up, right? Like, that's all I heard.
I mean, I like, one of the biggest things I've learned is how to execute better and how to use my time better and how to not, and like, how to go after hard tasks first and not make excuses for myself. But at the same time, like, that's a false delineation between talk and work. It's like, no, actually the hardest work you can do is improving yourself. Because there's like first order thinking of like, I'm just going to like make widgets. I'm just going to do my thing. I'm going to go through my email inbox and try to get to zero. That's like first order thinking. You're just like looking at what's in front of you and thinking about how to get it done. And then there's second order thinking, which is, here's what's in front of me, but over the next month, like, here's what's in front of, here are all the things that are in front of me. And over the next year, as I grow a team and I'm running an organization or I'm building a major project, here are all of the different gears that are functioning within this like organism. How do I wrap my head around that and find the most efficient systems and processes to manage it? That's very different than, how do I clear my email inbox?
Right. No, and I mean, we're very close and I spend a lot of time with you. And this is something that I will say, you don't just read the books, put them back, and then think, I suck, I'm not doing those things. You actually go out and try Marcus Aurelius and the meditations to live without a bed for a while, see what that's like, or, you know, whatever the thing is that you're really interested in, you try to express it through the entrepreneurial environment or your personal relationships. And so can you give a couple examples of how you're running this business, the stress is building, things that you might have learned in, you mentioned mentorship, who you surround yourself with, but ideas from these philosophers or thinkers, that is there one that really inspired you a lot that's helped you in your success. My favorite, of course, is like, you know, don't try to control things that are outside of you. Yeah. Like, I think that's probably been the thing that's shifted my frame of reference. You know, how many hours could I spend thinking about something that I have no influence over, right? Yeah. It's like, just shut that down, because that's got no value.
Totally. Yeah. I think there are a few, right? Like, that's definitely one. I read, I think it's in the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which is a book that's not fun to read at all. Like, it sells so many copies, but it sucks to read, but it's worth like reading once and then making an outline.
Yeah.
Because there's this whole thing of like, there's a circle of influence and the circle of concern, and the circle of influence lays within concentrically the circle of concern.
Uh-huh.
And so the circle of influence is like, what's all the shit that I can actually do something about?
Yes.
And the circle of concern is like, I'm so worried about all of this other shit that like I can't reach today. And
yes,
it's in that person's court or that person's court, or it's literally in the hands of like God or the universe or probability.
Uh-huh.
And I can't do anything about that. So why am I thinking about it every 5 minutes?
And we do.
And we totally
especially
do.
Especially as an entrepreneur. I mean,
right. I'm waiting for the investor to get back to me. Well, the investor's going to get back to you on his own damn time. Like, don't check your email every 5 minutes. Be present for dinner with your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
or get your other work done.
Or go find other investors and hedge. Like, what are you doing? Like,
You can literally, I mean, we've all done it, right? You can spend hours getting into the psychology of that investor, and he hates me, he doesn't get me. I wonder if it was the email. You reread your email,
right,
you
and
think
then you're
like
projecting childhood trauma onto this, like, no, like, just go.
And the person gets
forward.
Back and they're like, sorry, I was on a vacation without my cell phone for a week. And you're and like, you're, oh.
And then like, and then the worst is when you're like, how dare you be on vacation? It's like, get over yourself. I think that actually dovetails into something else, which is, so I don't know which mentor this necessarily comes from, but something from Stoicism and Marcus Aurelius and Seneca, which like this whole Tim Ferriss, Ryan Holiday crew has popularized in recent years to great benefit of all humanity with internet, is this like basic idea of not expecting things to serve you, not expecting things to be done for you or to work out for you.
Mm.
Don't expect the world to work in your favor. Like, the world works the way it does, and that's a good thing for the world. You're not the center of the world. And so, like, be happy that the world, like, works the way it does. This morning, a spider was on my son's stroller, and I swatted the spider away, and then I stomped the spider into oblivion and took great joy in it. And one of the reasons I'm happy I'm married to my wife is she got extremely upset with me for letting my ego rule me into this moment where I was taking such pleasure from killing this animal that really is part of a greater ecosystem of the world. Like, who the hell am I to kill the spider? Like, he wasn't, it's a non-poisonous garden spider. So I'm like projecting, oh, this dangerous animal is a, it's like not attacking my son, B.
Yeah.
And C, like, I already swatted him away. Why do I have to like finish the job? The spider, like, might be doing something good for the world that I don't understand biologically. And so it's not my right to take that animal's life away.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not like some crazy Buddhist. It's just like an acknowledgement that the spot, like, if it's not interfering with me, then why do I have to be upset at it? And this applies to everything in the world.
Like, but we spend so many hours. So do you remind yourself on a regular basis as you go down the spider path or whatever it is, the investor, how do you pull yourself back from going into that rabbit hole?
Well, I think part of it is just remembering your priorities and remembering that you have limited emotional capacity at any given moment. And so, like, if your priorities are doing a good job at work and like being your best self around the friends and family you care about, and, you know, minimizing the degree to which you're an asshole or a bitch, is like,
this will have to be explicit language. Podcast.
Like, I mean, that's, do you have to do that? You have to, can you beat me out?
You
is
do,
that,
but it's okay. I'll flip it.
For children.
There's no children. No,
anyway, if that's your goal, is to like be the best person you can be in all areas of your life, then you have to prioritize. And anything in, like, thoughts become behaviors, become habits, become character, become destiny, right? The Aristotelian progression.
Yeah.
And so which comes from all those books. So if you are not managing the thoughts that you're letting into your psyche, then you are not thinking about things that actually matter to you. Like, you can only think consciously about one or two things at a time. And so if I'm thinking,
despite the like millions of pieces of information bombarding our brains at any given second, which is amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. So if it, like, every second that I am thinking about, like, is my wife mad at me? Or like, is that investor like not going to get back to me? Or does this employee not trust me? Or any of these concerns that are outside my immediate circle of influence, every second I spend thinking about those, guess what I'm not thinking about? Like,
what you can influence.
What,
right?
I can influence. Like, how can I be like an extra awesome husband and dad tonight? Like, how can I like make my employees like love working here even more? Like, what can I be creative about? What can I be curious about? Like, every moment spent worrying is a moment not spent being creative, curious, or compassionate.
I love that. I love that. And I want to just step back for 1 second, because you said you remember your priorities, remember your goals. And that, again, you're going to take for granted because this has become second nature for you. But like, that would require somebody to set those priorities and goals. So what I hear you saying as the subtext of that is, I know you take time every year, every quarter, to like really get clear on those goals. Because I think going down that vortex, the way to come out is getting clear on what matters to you. But if you haven't taken the time to get clear on what matters, how do you come back out, right? So I've seen you do it. I'm not sure exactly what you're doing, scribbling papers all over the place, talking to a few friends, getting clear on your business goals, your personal goals. Yeah. What's that process for you?
That's a good question. I think it's changed a lot over the years. At first, it was very much, to steal from like the Buddhist definition of attachment, like I was very emotionally attached to whether or not the goal got accomplished.
Yeah.
And so I would latch myself onto this future goal that in my head was extremely tangible. And it would, maybe this is just my nature, it would always be something that was like way out of reach.
Right.
So I would like hurl myself in the direction of some stretch goal that I actually thought was possible because I was like superhuman. And then inevitably I would fail. But I would also land way further down the line, down the field than I ever would have if I hadn't ever set a goal. So, you know, although I was constantly disappointing myself, like, oh, we're going to like reach, you know, we're going to hit $1 million in revenue in our first year. Well, we like didn't at all. We hit like 12,000. But if we hadn't been super ambitious about it, we probably wouldn't have pursued anything nearly as aggressive and probably would have only raised half the money. Now, this happens enough times, dozens, hundreds, and you learn how to set more accurate goals. But what you realize is that actually being less attached to the specific goal, using the goal more as a guidepost for a direction that you're passionate about heading in. So like, I know what my priorities are, like what matters to me in terms of like how to keep my life in order. And the general direction I want things to go, like I want to like keep building a great family. I want to like build a company that's sustainable and makes an impact on millions of people's lives. I want to like keep traveling and learning. And so these are pretty general buckets, but they're all growth oriented. They're all contribution oriented. And so I can kind of set, it doesn't really matter what the goals are. The goals need to be more relevant to the domain itself. They don't, like, I don't need to attach myself to the goals. I just need to care about the goals enough to go and try to hit them. Because I know that if I march rapidly in that direction, I will be honoring my priority.
And I think what I would love to unpack just a little bit for the listeners is this idea of like setting the goal originally with the attachment of achieving it and then doing the sort of browbeating, I suck quality, which I think most of us do.
Yeah.
And then flipping over to setting the goal and recognizing that it's a guiding post and that it's not about beating yourself up. It's just about setting the trajectory. Because Ted, what I found in business, and I know you've realized, is you set goals, but then life is happening.
Oh my God.
Right. And the investor doesn't get back, and all these different things that are out of your sphere of influence are constantly happening. So you have to iterate, right?
Things not working out over time, things not working out ends up being the norm.
Yes.
Like the norm is not that things will work out. So don't go in expecting that things will work out. There's a huge difference between a goal and an expectation.
And how do you balance the hard work ethic of pushing through with the realities that sometimes when you're pushing into a wall, right? And so how do you recognize, hey, hold on a minute. I mean, obviously, if it's an investor who hasn't gotten back, that would be a great example of I have no influence over that situation. But what if you've started a product and it's just the market's not responding in the way you had hoped, right? Or an employee comes on and they're not doing the work that you had anticipated. Whatever the situation is, when do you stop pushing through and when do you say, you know what? This isn't me quitting. This is me actually being intelligent about pivoting.
Well, so that's really interesting and brings up in my head something else that has been a really big transformational force in my life as the momentum has built, which is martial arts. I've practiced this martial art called Aikido for the past 6 years. And Aikido is a peaceful martial art that's focused on taking the momentum of your attacker, your assailant, and guiding it to the floor in a way that doesn't actually cause pain to your attacker, but totally neutralizes the attack. And this is done by viewing your attacker as a partner rather than viewing them as an enemy. Our instinct when someone attacks us, physically, verbally, in any other way, is to think that that person is our enemy because they have declared themselves our enemy. We must also declare them to be our enemy. But actually, they've just declared themselves to be in it, they're in, to be our enemy. We're just assuming that by agreeing that they're our enemy, that that somehow empowers us to join the fight and that maybe we'll win the fight if we view them as our enemy. Way, totally like false chain of assumptions, right? Like actually, the fact that they have declared us to be their enemy means that they have like a tremendous error in judgment. And for us to copy that behavior is an even bigger error in judgment because we're mimicking someone who has made a tremendous error in judgment.
Right.
And so what Aikido teaches is that when, you know, when someone's attacking, we need to reprogram our reflex to actually see them as a very confused partner. And we need to basically take that attack and the momentum and channel it in a direction that we want to see it. Now, the whole point with this is that when something in life is not working out, we often get mad at that thing. So it's not always a person. Sometimes we get frustrated at the product itself. Sometimes we get frustrated at the situation.
Yeah.
And we say, this is life. This is the universe. This is whatever not working out in my favor. Like always, goddammit. Right? And like then we tell ourselves that story.
Yeah.
In fact, what you can do is just say, hey, the situation has changed. I'm not about to make an error in judgment and assume that this is somehow bad. It's just not what I was expecting.
Yes.
And so how do I take this new situation, which objectively may actually be less ideal or maybe
not,
more ideal?
Right. Sometimes we don't know what was actually serve us.
How do I turn shit into sugar? Right. Yeah, like how do I make the most of this?
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Ted, we're getting to the point of the interview, although I could chat with you for another hour. I ask all my guests the same question. What does an authentic life then mean to you?
I think an authentic life means checking in with yourself at some regular cadence on what really matters to you from the bottom of your soul and your heart, not what people have told you matters, but what matters to you. And then doing your best to compare that to how you act and behave and make choices on a daily basis. And constantly over the course of your life, trying to keep that gap as small as possible.
Beautiful, beautiful. And we talked about a couple things already that you use as daily practices, Aikido, reading a whole bunch of books, mentors, anything else you want to share with the audience to daily practices or tools to keep you in an authentic path?
Take a walk. Americans don't walk enough. I lived in Europe a lot recently and there's a walking culture. It's very good for the health.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks, Ted, for coming on the show today. And thank you so much for listening. If you're looking for more information from Ted, you can find him at
My website is tedgonder.com, but more importantly, you can check out our organization, MoneyThink, at moneythink.org, and would love to hear from you.